evening. Welcome to the Spooky White Birds podcast. My name is Mike Sim. I'm a commercial photographer in the United Kingdom and over the Atlantic Ocean in a place that's actually colder than it is in the UK right now is my best friend in the entire world, Christopher Sturm.
Hello. Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right, man. Like I said, yeah. I am toasty warm. Got the heating on because my heating works. Got my pins out. Look at these bad boys. Look at that.
Put those pale sticks away.
That actually looks like, you know, when you... thankfully, my crotch is just out of shot, but like, it looks like a chicken wing.
It looks like once a fresh...
Once you've taken all the chicken off.
A fresh plucked chicken wing, yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's the look I'm going for. So,
congrats.
Ladies, if you want to be around about Oxford in the summer, this is what you've got. This is what you... Ladies.
This is your option. This is your one option. Take it
your
or leave
one
it.
Option. Yeah, some guy with bleached hair, an earring, and horrible legs.
Listen, it was your decision to go full George Michael. You should really lean into it, you know?
He was renowned as a lovely, lovely man. I will take that any day.
Yeah. That's not a slight. He's amazing.
There's great stories about George. Apparently, like, there was one day he tipped, like, some waitress who'd... I think it was in the UK. She'd had, you know, some financial difficulties, and she happened to mention it when he was inquiring as to her well-being. And he left her like 20 grand tip.
Holy, really? Holy crap.
Yeah, there's quite a few stories like that of him like calling in anonymously to lots of places as well and just like leaving money for people.
That's beautiful.
Great guy.
Great guy. Love him.
Great guy. So, you know,
so RIP. you're, you know, just continuing the spirit of George Michael, and I really appreciate that.
I am, and I know that it's my only difference between George, because obviously I've got the same voice, same talent.
Same singing voice, same talent.
Same talent, same dark looks.
Yeah, I say that you guys, yeah.
The Greek heritage runs deep in me.
Deep, yeah. It's a good look. Not a lot of people can pull it off. I'm adjusting my volume here a little bit.
No, I think I mean, if Dundee is not in Greece, but I think I definitely have the same charisma. Unlike George, I'm attracted to women. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. There's some very attractive men out there, and I am. Mm-hmm. I will more often than not point out attractive men over attractive women. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean it doesn't mean that I'll kiss them.
Okay, but you might.
I might. I mean, I've kissed a guy before.
Yeah, we all have.
Yeah, yeah.
As you should.
I did it really passionately. and to get a rough idea of how long ago it was, somebody was kind enough to upload it to Bebo, which I don't think you had in America.
I don't know what the hell Bebo is. I'm assuming it's like a YouTube channel.
No. It was post, although maybe ran concurrently with MySpace.
So it was like a social media thing?
Yeah, it was a social media thing, yeah. So somebody posted a photo of me passionately kissing a man to... he was a very good friend of mine.
And there's got to be one or two...
May have been under the influence of some drugs.
Yeah. There may be a photo or two of me drunkenly kissing a friend of mine. I can't be sure. I don't know.
You hope there is.
Safe bet is that there is.
Yeah, I hope so. You know? you were a musician, and that's part and parcel of the gig.
I still am. Look,
hey, I'm not denying that. Can you? How many songs by The Verve can you play?
Just the one.
Which one?
The one.
Bittersweet Symphony.
Yeah, that's the Verve pipe, isn't it?
Huh?
Is that the Verve or the Verve pipe? There's two. Which one's which?
The Verve.
The Verve. Done. Okay. I'm confused. There's the Verve and then there's the Verve pipe, and they're the same. They're different bands, but I always forget which one's which.
Well, the Verve is Richard Ashcroft, and then, you know, Bittersweet Symphony, Lucky Man, he went on Sonnet, Drugs Don't Work. That's Richard Ashcroft and the Verve.
Yeah, I can play Bittersweet Symphony, but only because there's no guitar parts in that song, so it's easy to play.
Yeah, you just go...
I can play the drum part of that song.
Yeah, it's just a basic rock beat, isn't it?
Pretty easy, yeah. Pretty quick.
But
we gotta get your singing career going if you're gonna do the George Michael shtick.
I've got just...
Is this what people tuned in for? Is this what we're doing? Is this what this podcast is for today?
It's the George Michael Appreciation Podcast.
I was gonna say... Have you had a busy week? I've had a pretty busy week. It's only Tuesday, I guess, since the last time we potted. It's
been pretty busy. Yeah, I mean, I've been doing that thing you do before you buy new camera gear, which is to just relentlessly research cameras. But then also you pick a camera and then you relentlessly research that one camera. And then you watch every video about it and you read everything about it. And you do that with the lenses as well. And then even once you get the camera, you keep doing that, don't you? That's just what you do until the point where you're a complete expert on. I mean, when I got my, the last camera I bought was the RB. And I probably could have hosted a seminar on RB67s.
Yeah, by the end of it. That's what happened to me too, is like after, you know, you decide that's the camera you want, you just like spend hours on YouTube just watching every idiot's idea, you know, video about it.
So including I'm going to go full hog. Like I'm going to get new digital setup. I'm going to get an iMac and I'm going to get a graphics tablet.
An iMac. So instead of like
my laptop
individual, you want to do the full in one iMac.
Yeah, because I mean, I've got my laptop, but it's for editing. I just like, you know, I've got an opportunity to get like a setup that I have always wanted. So I'm just going to do it.
Are you going to do the new M1 iMac?
I like them. They're cool.
I think that's the way to go.
And the price point's all right as well.
I think that's the way to go. I think that as far as all-in-one, I mean, it's the most powerful. I mean, I have the M1 Mac Mini. It's wild.
Yeah.
It was like $1,000 and it's like the fastest, most capable computer I've ever had. And it's a mini. It's a Mac Mini.
Yeah, I think the iMacs, the ones that you're talking about, I think they're like £1,200.
Yep.
Which is like a great price point. Like my laptop, which is a Mac Pro 2 or something like that, I don't know, or whatever it is, it's got like, it was like 1,500 quid.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a great computer, but like I want an iMac because I like the idea of just a dedicated workstation as well.
Well, also, you know, even the baseline Mac 1 or M1 iMac was going to blow away your MacBook Pro. Like, easily.
Yeah.
And that's riveting. So you're going to get an iMac. You're going to get a new digital setup.
Yep. The X-T4. And
you decided on the X-T4? Oh, right on.
X-T4, yeah. I was messing around with a Fujifilm today, and that's what I'm going to go for. And then, I've been looking at, I've just been looking at 4x5s.
Oh, yeah. Are you looking at the Intrepids or the other, or what are you looking at?
Chamonix or what's Christopher got? The
speed graphic?
No, the oh my god, why did I just forget the name of it? This is really good podcast stuff. whatever Cam McDougall's got, a similar one to that.
Oh yeah, he's got like the fancy, I think it's Japanese. It's a really nice
That's
one.
Right.
Yeah.
And their price point's all right as well. It's actually, you can get them less than a Chamonix. Secondhand.
Oh, nice. I think the one that McDougall has is really pretty and a good, it's a nice looking camera and it seems like it has all the features.
That's a huge part for me is how it looks. The 4x5. Like, I know that's ridiculous, but it's true. It's not ridiculous at all. I think when you're buying an old camera, you want them to look.
Everything about photography is visual, aesthetic, tactile. I tell people whenever they ask me what kind of camera they should get, I tell them to find a camera they think looks cool and they think feels cool to hold and buy that one because that's the one you're going to want to pick up because it appeals to you, you know?
I totes agree. Do people still say totes?
Yeah, totes.
Okay, yeah, no. Do guys who are under 35 say totes?
Mostly, not usually over 35. Wait, actually, it's an older generation thing probably. Like our generation, I think that's totes. Squarely... That's totes our thing. You know?
Totes my goats. and what about you? What have you been up to?
Oh, man.
Great video, by the way, recently.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much for sharing that really flattering picture of me.
Look, I wanted to put a picture of you, and I was going to use that one Kyle took that was really a cool picture of you. But then I didn't, you know, I just didn't like the idea of you hot-dogging in my video. I had to bring you down a notch. So I put that video of you with your...
I don't know what hot dogging means.
Being a show off, you know, just looking like being the cool kid, you know?
All right, okay, yeah. Okay.
I didn't want you showing me up in my own video, so I had to take it down a notch.
I am renowned for my hot dogging.
Yeah. So I'm glad that you enjoyed it. Yeah, that was a fun video to make, because oftentimes I'll just be like, blah, 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 blah for 10 minutes and then show a bunch of photos and then blah, 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 blah afterwards. And I think it was a lot more fun to kind of like discuss each frame as I went through them, because they each one had its own individual kind of like reason I took it and how I felt about it. So yeah, that was, I think we're going to have more of that format.
As a film stock, it definitely seemed to fill a gap between Portrait and Ektar.
It's interesting. It does, because it has
What's the film we're talking about again?
It's Silbera Color 100. And it's, I mean, I can only speak for the 120. I don't know what the 35 is like, because I haven't shot it yet. But yeah, it's got the saturation where it's got nice colors, but it's not as saturated as Ektar. And then it's got the latitude a bit, and it's got this really good, it just sits in a really nice range. It's kind of got, there's some portrait-esque qualities to it as well. So I don't know what it is. Apparently it's Aero Color made by Kodak, but I'm not really sure.
It's reds and greens. It's reds and greens were certainly portrait-esque, I thought.
Yeah, less on the Fuji side, more definitely more on the Kodak side. I dig it. I'll shoot it again. Like I said in the video, it was kind of a bitch at certain points to deal with. People complained about scanning it, but it scans super. Like, I didn't do anything to these scans. All I did was made sure that the exposure was like even, and that's pretty much all I did. So
well, it looked tops. There was one frame that I wanted to reach in and punch you in the face though, because you cut someone's feet off and it really annoyed me.
Oh, I did? Which one? Was it the one with the people walking towards the camera?
Walking towards the camera. I was like, it was one of these things where I was like, oh, it's just bugging me.
Yeah, you know, going back, I would have composed it a little bit higher and maybe cut them off at the thigh instead, but they were just too close. I was in the moment. I just grabbed it. I don't think it's bad.
It's not bad. It's not. It's one of those things like, you know, in school when like a teacher's cleaning a chalkboard and they miss a bit. And you're just sitting there going, oh, I just want to go and rub that bit off. I was like, I just wish he'd moved the camera just like a centimeter down. And then I thought, of all the people that he's not going to care about saying that, it's me. So I didn't text you. I was going to.
You should have. I don't care. but yeah, I was trying, you know, it's funny. I was getting ready earlier. I was setting the camera up for video and I was getting stuff ready and I was like looking for the charger for my camera because one of the batteries was low and I couldn't find it. I was getting really frustrated and then I realized I couldn't find it because it wasn't where it was. I had put it away where it should be and never put anything away where it should go. So I couldn't find it because I was looking in all the wrong places because it was in the place it should have been, which was on my cabinet thing and like away. Properly, and just made me realize I'm very disorganized and I need to start being more organized as a person, but as a photographer, because I think that a lot of my problems that I have in photography and my channel and stuff is just like pure disorganization.
It's hard, isn't it? I mean, like I'm gonna basically, having taken almost 2 years since like I was properly working as a photographer, and like next year I'm going back out into it. Like there's going to be a push. And that's the thing. It's like, I've got to now reorganize everything. And then I've got to like, I'm going to have to like, what's what? Like I need some sort of tunnel vision as well. So it's going to have to be like, okay, Instagram's now going to have to become, because it was commercially, it was food work that I mainly did. So now I'm going to have to start doing like that again. Then it's like, fucking hell, do I create another Instagram page or like what? And then build up from the start. And I've gone back in touch with some old, like some people I know in the industry who are like pretty well known. And I've just been like, look, can I come to your restaurant and just like shoot for free for a day? And like, you can have all the images so I can rebuild a portfolio.
Right.
And then these are people who are well known, well respected, and also have connections. And it's like, okay, there's some work that's going back out there. So it's like, I'm essentially starting again. I mean, I'm not, because I've got these connections, but like, it's because there's so many facets now to being a commercial photographer. It's not a case of like, there's loads of people I know that like who work consistently and either their Instagram is utterly garbage or they don't care about it. but they're at a level where they're not getting work through anything like that. So my thing is, how much do I care about, like, I think a website has to be good.
Yeah.
And then how much do I care about Instagram? Because if someone goes to find me on Insta, which is the first thing people do, isn't it? Really? Realistically, yeah. Like, are you on Insta? It's like, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then they go on mine and it's like, I've got one page which has got like film portraits, and then I've got another one which is like half skate stuff. And it's like, it's a total mess. And it's because I've not been disciplined with it at all.
I think you just kind of have to figure out your brand, because when it comes to stuff like commercial food or lifestyle photography or editorial stuff, your Instagram, in my perspective, kind of becomes like a business card. So, you know, you give out your Instagram, people go look at it, and it's got like a snapshot. I kept hitting this microphone. It's kind of like a snapshot of your work, your recent work. You know, and that goes a long way to kind of like informing people like what your style is. Yeah. And so it kind of almost is like an extension of your website, because I think what's really important, what's truly important, is a good website. If you have a website that's like concise and has good work and you update it often, and that's what's really going to matter and going to get you work. But if you have a good, at least an Instagram that looks like you give a little bit of a shit and you have, you know, some recent work there, and then a link to your website and all that stuff, I think that that's helpful. I don't think it's the end all be all. I think you could also be like, fuck Instagram and not care at all.
But then you've got to be working.
And those are the two kind of like extremes of it, really. Me, I kind of have left it at that. Like, my Instagram is more of like a working, like a rolling kind of like portfolio, you know. It's just updated by, you know, what's new, what I've been working on. And then my website is my website needs an overhaul. I need new work on there, but like, my website's just kind of like, okay, if you want to like see the breadth of my work, check out my website.
Yeah. I think your website's super concise, and I think there's definitely a style as well. So like, the other thing with what's really good is that it's varied, but the style's the same. So like, the content, the actual context of the content is different, but there's a very clear style.
And that's kind of what I went to like achieve with the website, because I wanted it to be like, oh, okay, this is his style. He can do all these things, but they're all going to look kind of like the same, which is cool.
Exactly.
I'm over Instagram. It's mostly fun now. Yep, like, agreed. It's been more fun to not deal with it.
Yeah.
But it's helpful in a lot of ways. Like, just recently, yesterday, so I've been working on a secret project. And I haven't told anybody about it because I wasn't sure it was going to work out. And I'm still very unsure about it. And I'm still very like nervous about it, because it's a big undertaking. But I put out a poll yesterday on Instagram stories, and I got a lot of feedback with that poll about the project, which was actually really helpful, because I wasn't sure what kind of response I would get. And it was a very small sample size, but it was still super helpful. So the project is, I'm starting a Patreon. I've been working on a Patreon. So, but like, Instagram is not going to be the central like hub for that, right? Like, I'm going to be way more focused on like the Patreon page and my website, because that's where all the content's going to be, or my YouTube channel. So Instagram is like this thing that kind of like funnels things. Yeah.
So with Patreon, you have a Patreon page that is like a separate website that has access to all this other stuff.
Yeah. So basically what you do is like, you have this page and there's tiers that you can pay into, like whatever tier you want to get whatever perks you want.
You pay with tiers.
I wish it was. You had to cry to get in. No, they have different tiers, so you can like pay like, so mine's going to be $3, $6, or $9 a month, and all of the tiers get the same base like access to all of the extra content that's going to go up on there. But then like tier two, you get extra little perks that'll like be worth it or whatever, and then the tier above that, you get even more little tiny perks that like make it a little bit more. And then there's like another tier that's like above that, that's like more expensive, but you get like merch and stuff. So all of the tiers get the same amount of access to me, to the Discord, to the community page. to the stuff. Yeah, but every tier gets like a little bit, a little extra sweetness added to it. But the idea is to do that. And that way, if I get enough subscribers or enough people that join the Patreon, then I can turn the ads off on my YouTube videos, not take any sponsorships, and then spend all my time doing YouTube and podcasting, and then not have to worry about other stuff. Can you that do way?
Can you do a $1,000 one where me and you turn up to their house?
I think it needs to be more than $1,000. I think it would need to be like, it'd have to pay for all of our, you know, expenses to get there and get back and lodging.
Okay. I mean, okay. $1,000 where we come and stay at your house.
Well, I'm going to do a thing where I'll put a Venmo link, and if they want to donate more for whatever thing, they can do that. I don't think anyone's going to pay for us to hang out with them.
Well, that's just silly, because I know it's a shame, because they're missing out, to be honest.
Maybe missing out on us. We're so cool.
I know. Actually, cool? Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it would be quite nice for us to actually meet each other in person first. That would be a good idea.
I think that's going to have to happen first. It's going to happen so soon, guys.
And we're hoping it's going to happen soon. And we're trying. In fact, if anyone wants to get on board with this as well, we're trying to get McDougal to come with us.
He seems amenable to it. He seems like he's down.
I sent his wife like a really nice video.
You talked to his wife, or you sent her a video?
You saw the video, the one where
Did he show his wife?
I hope so. If he didn't, then I mean, what was the point in sending it? I made a really good effort to like cover up my hair as well, so I looked like presentable. It's for his job. It's his job.
That's true. It is technically work for him.
Exactly.
But is it really? Is it really?
Just yes, right. Definitely. Okay. But speaking of work, something we wanted to talk about, which is a topic that I'm still, as much as I've read into it, I feel like I've learned about as much as I can learning about it. But it's NFTs.
Yeah.
And NFTs, obviously, in regards to photography. And where do we stand on it? Now there's a big, you know, debate is the debate around the morality of it? Or is it
there's a couple of facets. Like there's the ecological standpoint where generating NFTs and like the whole NFT space is like not energy efficient whatsoever. There's a debate around autonomy for artists, whether or not that really does offer what it says it does. And then there's a lot of debate around a lot of people who think that it's just a cash grab by people with money.
Yeah.
On the other side, their argument is that it allows for artists to have real ownership over their work, non-fungible token, which basically means it can't be stolen or taken away, whatever. It's like theirs, they own it, and it's on the blockchain.
Yeah.
Which I still have a tenuous grasp of understanding, especially like the blockchain stuff is like, I get it, but like, do I really get it? I don't know.
The thing is that it was one of these things where I first heard about it and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. And it bothered me and I couldn't figure out why it bothered me. And
immediately I started trolling. Immediately I was like, oh, this dude,
you were on it. You were like a bat out of hell. You were all over it. I mean,
yeah.
And I remember just being, fuck, I was just like, oh, fuck, it's another thing that's just fucking doing. And then, the more I thought about it, the more I read about it, I was just like, why wouldn't I do that? Like, I mean, I need to make money somehow. And like, so I put something out on Instagram and I don't get any money for it. Now, if I put something out there and somebody decides to buy that digital image, and then the complaint is that, well, it can be duplicated a million times. Of course it can, but you can do that on Instagram right now. Like you can literally
screenshot my image. You can do that with literally any art.
Go on my website, do whatever. Like you can just nick it. I don't, like you can do that. But if I can, if somebody buys the, you know, inverted commas original, it makes no difference to me. And I've made some money at the end of the day. And like, And I mean, I remember like somebody saying that, and it's true. It was the point of, you know, they were saying, who cares if you own the original? But it's the same way that people somebody owns an original artwork, and then there's thousands and thousands of prints made that people buy for, you know, £10 in a gift shop.
Right.
It's the same thing. It's like
if someone owns an Ansel Adams actual print,
print.
You know, versus, you know, an inkjet print that someone sells in a shop. Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing.
It's basically the same thing. And somebody owned, and then also I didn't realize is the artist can still maintain, there's a huge spectrum or gray area in which you can operate. So you can still own the rights to that photograph.
Right.
Or you can, there can be contracts where you still get a percentage of every resale or reuse or whatever else on it. So it's not a simple case of like you hand that over. Even if I did, you know, every time I do a commercial job, I hand over the rights to my photography most of the time. Like,
right. Mm-hmm.
There's just
fundamental stuff involved where it's like, this is normal, right? Like some of the stuff that you're doing involving the NFT stuff is kind of an analog for something you do already in the, like, I guess, physical space. But often the digital space too, because, you know, most commercial work is still done digitally, or even if it's done on film, it's still transferred digitally. It's still shared digitally, whatever.
Yeah.
So there is a lot to be said that, you know, it is pretty normal. It's just a different
way of doing it. I think in terms of photography, I think it's not really, I mean, most of our photography exists digitally these days. So like, and we are so ready to put our images out there without any thoughts of copyright or theft or anything, like especially on somewhere like Instagram, because you don't, as soon as it's on Instagram, you don't own anything. It's basically free to be taken, isn't it?
Yeah.
So like we do that without thinking anything about it. So if I could give over a digital image, I mean, like when I do like resale images, so you shoot something for a magazine and then another magazine or newspaper wants to buy the image, you just fling them over a file and they send you some money. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, there's loads of things. I think as far as photography goes, I think it's not a bad thing. I think the morality around it is problems where like dickheads like Paul. What's his name? The guy that's got into the YouTube guy that's got into like boxing and stuff.
Oh, Logan Paul.
Logan Paul or Jake Paul, one of the Pauls. They're both dicks. They're like NFT and like clips from their YouTube videos and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, guys, come on. Like, you're already like, but it's, you know, it's,
well, that's where I was going to say, like, there's anything that you do to make money or to like commodify your art, it's going to come with caveats and it's going to be a different way of doing things. But the problem with NFTs that I see is that you have this initial thing where it's like, oh yeah, this trading of assets, this like getting paid for all this stuff seems really normal. But I think the space in which it's being done is what's fundamentally problematic and what I have an issue with. So when it first came out and people started talking about it, my first instinct, you know how they say, like, if you're around a sociopath, you can kind of feel it. There's like an instinctual thing where human beings can like recognize that someone has like no empathy and they like get the fight or flight response.
I thought I was like a sociopath for a while.
Haven't like, we literally. All? Yeah. But that's a thing that's been studied. I don't know how true it is. But anyway, the point is I kind of got that same kind of feeling that you, or the feeling you get when you see something that's an obvious scam or a pyramid scheme where you're just like embarrassed for the person and like you're like, oh, this is a train wreck. I got that exact same feeling where it was just like, there's no way this isn't a scam, because let's look at what it entails. You have an NFT, which is the token that it states, or it kind of like,
it's that's your ownership. Ownership. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And then it goes on a blockchain, which means that like that ledger that has everything on the blockchain anonymously says that that's your token anonymously, which I don't understand how it tracks that, but sure. And then you can sell that NFT to someone else and then they then have the token that says that they own it. But then the person who sold it still has some kind of rights at some point. Money changes hands a lot of times. The initial conceit of it doesn't really bother me as much, except for the ecological impact. There's a lot of studies that haven't been done and have been done about that. I still think there needs to be a lot more study going into it, but I'm pretty sure the ones that have come out are right, that it is ecologically not very sound. much of crypto stuff isn't. So I'm not really surprised.
Can you only buy it with crypto?
Yeah. You have to buy crypto with real money to then buy NFTs. Yeah.
So
like NFTs are typically going, I guess the money that, or the crypto that's mostly used for NFTs is Ethereum.
That was one thing I didn't quite understand is whether or not you had to buy. I'm really sorry that my calf is just on show here.
It's just that like the same thing is like if you come to America, you have to transfer your money into US money to be able to spend it here. You know, same kind of thing. It's like you're going, it's like I see the crypto space as another country and they have their own currency.
Do you have any money in crypto?
No. Uh-uh.
No.
I don't have any money. So here's the thing. Yeah, right. So here's the big problem that I see with this. The crypto space around NFTs is they claim to be inclusive and like easy to get into, but it's not. You have to have money to make any sort of moves there.
And surely that the currency and the worth fluctuates constantly.
Yeah, it's like anything else. Like it's going to have value and it's going to dip in value some days, it's going to go up in value other days. It's a speculative market technically.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like I can't really say that because I don't know. I don't know enough about it.
You can tell who the smart one is in this podcast and then I'll give you a clue. It's not me.
It's you. The smart one in this podcast is neither of us because we're talking about NFTs. And we should just avoid it completely.
Actually, yeah, no, the joke's on anyone listening to this.
But the thing that crypto bros and other people in the space have been yelling at me on Twitter for a long time is that anybody can get into NFTs. There are places where you can mint NFTs for very cheap or free. And then you can sell your NFTs on those cheap or free sites. And it's like, oh, okay, the problem is solved. Well, not actually. The problem is none of the people that have money who are buying NFTs are going on the free platforms. They have money. They're going to go where the other people with money are going to go. And none of the high value NFTs are being sold on these free or cheap platforms because it's free or cheap. Like there's no intrinsic value there. The thing that it seems to be is it's a secret handshake between these people who are creating NFTs and the people buying NFTs where it's just like wink and a nod. We both have money. We're helping each other out as people with money. And it seems to me that the only way to have any kind of movement or success in the NFT space is to invest money in the first place. And to me, this is no different than just Wall Street. This is just the stock market and it just looks different. Whereas the stock market, if you don't have any money, you have no place there. Because you have to take money that you have that's liquid, put it into stocks or funds or whatever, or trusts, and then you might see a return on your investment. Your return on investment completely hinges on your initial investment. Did you invest a good amount of money? You might get a good return. Did you invest a little bit of money? Your return's not going to be worth that much. Like, it's not going to work for you if you're poor.
That fascinated me, which was they were talking, it was about people with large sums of money that it all goes into investments and it all goes into like, you know, it goes into stocks and shares portfolios and whatnot.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, we all know they have various account managers, accountants, money men looking after their money. And it was something that said like, so say someone's a billionaire and they want to buy a new car. They want to buy a £400,000 car.
Yeah.
They don't access their billions to get the £400,000 car. They'll take out a loan against their assets.
Right.
And then the money that's already in there, accumulating more money on interest and whatnot. The interest is paying off their loan. So they're actually, they're using other people's money to buy something while their money continues to make money. And it's
exactly.
Like,
rich people don't spend their own money. Rich people leverage their wealth to get credit. And that's how...
I'd never thought about that. And I was just like, they've got this money and they don't ever touch their own money. It just accrues more wealth.
And that's the problem to people like you and me, or I'll even just say for people like me, I have decent credit now, but like I don't have the assets to leverage for a good loan for anything.
Oh, dude.
I could get a car loan. I have a credit card with Capital One. I can get a loan from them in the value of like $68,000 or something, but only if I go to dealerships in their network that they qualify for.
Yeah.
And only if I buy like a new car specific, like I, like they'll loan me $68,000, but it's only if it's on their terms, basically like the highest APR. You know, I have to buy a new car that I'm going to be locked into paying for like 72 months, like, or more than that. It's just like, it's like there's this conceit for poor people.
Yeah.
That you can build your credit up. You just got to like work on it. It's like, no, there's no pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. You either get a windfall or you don't, you know?
Yeah, basically.
And it's not fair that it, that's the way it is.
Really. What, I mean,
and that's how it is in the crypto scene.
But could you also say that this is actually a good thing for photography now? Because we're, everything's going online. Everything is going online. Like the ability to like, you know, like you're saying, like, you know, your portfolio the majority of the time is, it's just Instagram. It's just what you put up on Instagram. Like, all my stuff's on my website, you know, we both shoot a lot of film and we scan it. It becomes digital straight away. Like everything's there and everything's there to be taken.
Yeah.
Is that a, I mean, there's a huge benefit to being able to go if it's accessible and if it's, if people actually want it, if there's a, if there's a, if there's a need for it and a demand for it, why can't, you know, we should be able to sell our digital work.
Yeah. But the problem is, what is our work worth to anybody? What is picture I take worth to anyone?
That's the
we have literally the worst art I've ever seen being sold as NFTs for stupid money. Like the lazy lions and the dumb monkeys. It's the ugliest, worst piece of shit art I've ever seen. And it's being assigned value that I never would have conceived in my entire life.
But art's only worth what someone's willing to pay for it, you know? And it's
That's the problem. Like, I'm not even saying I have the best taste in anything, right?
But that hat says otherwise.
But like, from an objective standpoint, a JPEG of a monkey wearing sunglasses, I don't understand it. I don't understand. Yeah. Like, there's no. Jack, why is that name? Cool?
Jack Dorsey or something? The guy that founded Twitter.
Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, he NFT'd his first tweet.
Yeah.
The first tweet on Twitter.
See, but I can kind of understand that.
There's value in that, at least, I suppose.
I can kind of understand that because it's like, it was his first tweet on like this mega popular social media site. Like, sure, I can understand how someone would want to own that as for like a bragging factor. Who the hell's bragging about the stupid monkey picture, right? But then I've had people be like, it's not about the art. That's just like a stand-in because it's like the crypto is what's important. It's like, then why bother with the art in the first place? Like, it's like a distraction, right?
So I sell an NFT, right? I sell an NFT. They pay me in crypto.
Mm-hmm.
I then have the opportunity to hold on to that cryptocurrency and let it fluctuate, make me money, lose me money, or I can obviously just cash it out as cash.
Right. See, well, the thing is, you're not going to lose money because the art itself, say you drew a stupid picture of a monkey and sold it, right?
It would be a fucking great picture of a monkey.
Sure, but it also would be worthless because who cares? Why is that? That's not art, right? It's just whatever. Like,
I'm not going to say that you've just really, really hurt my feelings.
Look, Mike, if you draw a picture of a monkey, I'm sure it'll be great. Do I think it's worth two Ethereum, which is like the equivalent of like $30,000? No, it's not worth that much. It just isn't.
Would you buy it if you had that money? If I drew a really good monkey?
If I had $30,000 to spend,
you've publicly said you're my best friend.
So as your best friend, I'm not going to lie to you. And I'm not going to also buy your shitty art to make you feel better. So no, I will not buy your monkey. But so with that digital art that's being sold, you're on camera, sir. Put your phone down.
I've got a daughter.
A child. Right? I know.
Yeah. So, I mean, she can't text. She was four on Wednesday.
Wow. Congratulations on having a baby.
And it's not dead. That I didn't kill.
So. No, actually, that's great. Happy birthday to her.
Thanks, man.
But here's the thing. I had one of the big problems I have with NFTs is that the bad art, like the, you know, the digital art that's being traded, and sold, the values that they're being sold for are incredible. Like, to the point where it's like, this is what you would pay for like a real piece of like Renaissance art, right? So there's something else going on there. There's something dark. There's something like,
yeah, but do you know, it reminds me of a little bit of when there was that huge street art boom.
And like, but that's still
okay. That's tangible art, so it's different, right? Money's exchange.
Well, not even that it's tangible. Even if it was digital, like those people are artists. Like, they're good artists. And but like,
what defines an artist?
I mean, look, we can debate on what makes you an artist or not. I would argue that
if Jake Paul's selling a fucking frame of a shitty YouTube video, then okay, that's not art. That's him just flogging something for.
And if someone makes a bunch of digital lions and monkeys and other really bad art specifically to sell for thousands and thousands of dollars in crypto, I would argue that's not really art either, because there's nothing going into it other than the desire to make money, right? I don't think these street artists are going out there and being like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm putting this pasty up because I'm going to get thousands. Like, they probably don't think anyone's going to notice, right? But Banksy didn't start out because he was like, he didn't invest in street art and then knew he was going to be a millionaire. He just happened to become a millionaire because people really resonated with his art, right?
At what point?
I think intentionality has a lot to do with it for me. Yeah. And that's just my opinion.
I mean, intentionality with art is to me is everything. And I completely agree with that. If your end goal is to make money, then I would say that that's where an artist can, you know, if your end goal is to create something to make money, then.
Well, I think that every artist should be able to make money off their art. And I think that their goal, well, that's what I was going to say. Their goal can be to make money, but if you know you're fleecing people with bad art as an analog for some token or whatever, like the art itself almost doesn't, like I've had people tell me literally in arguments on Twitter, people in that space literally say art, the art doesn't matter. It's not about the art. It's about the token and what it stands for. And it's like, yeah, I get that, but people are still paying and displaying this stupid thing that they have, and they have pride over it. Like there is like a guy who had one of the monkeys with the sunglasses. I think they're called bored monkeys, I guess. Or bored ape. I don't know what the hell I don't care. He was like saying like, yeah, you can right click save this all you want, but I own the original and like no one else can. It's like a one of a kind. And it's like one of a kind. What? Like you're like, there's a lot of things that are one of a kind that are worth nothing. That is one thing that you, right. And then so in creating that art, it's almost anti-art, which is kind of art in itself, if you think you about go. It. But it's not, but it's a capitalist. Let me just say, sorry, it's okay. My biggest problem with the NFT space is not that there is some sort of like, because there is a problem with accessibility. The problem is that it's at the end, it's a capitalist endeavor to make as much money as possible on a new technology. And they're using art as the way to do it, which is
so it's
shitty.
Not really. Yeah, it's not really about supporting an artist, is it?
No, it's not. And that's the thing. It's not honest about that. And the problem that I have is like NFTs on its face might be something I can get around or get my head around or get into, because like I would love to have more autonomy with like how I sell my art, who gets to have it, what my art sells for, blah, 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 whatever, right? But the problem with NFTs currently, I can't afford to get into it. I just can't. Yeah. If I go and mint at a low cost or free platform, no one's going to see my work because no one goes there. No one's selling high value work there. And if I want to sell my work for a lot, you know, if I want to maybe potentially get someone to buy my work, I have to mint this at, you know, I think the cheapest I've seen like $80 maybe to mint, which is not nothing. It's a lot. And then I've seen it go up to like $500 to mint an NFT. It just depends on the platform and what you're doing. So it's completely unaffordable to me. And the conceit that there's ways for someone like me to get into NFTs and be successful is a straight up fallacy. And it's insulting because once again, as a starving artist, and I am a starving artist, I am a starving artist. I don't have savings. I don't have a safety net. I don't have, I'm not making a ton of money what I'm doing. I'm surviving, but just barely. Yeah. I don't have money to get involved and invest. So I have to sit back and watch as people who have money get
make
richer.
More money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just, that's why I say it's just like Wall Street, because it is.
Yeah, and it's a shame because I think that, you know, like I see it as something that could be so good and something that I think could benefit, like, you know, all photographers, you know, like, but like you're saying, it's just not accessible.
Yeah. And then the point where it gets accessible and everyone can do it, it's saturated, and then you won't see those high value. Yeah.
If it was something you could do that you didn't have to buy through cryptocurrency, and you could just buy the digital token and you could, you know, own that digital copy of somebody's work, the original, then that would be great. And I think that that's something that, you know, we could definitely all like, because even, you know, now, like if I want to sell like a print, which, you know, I do offer prints to sell, but like that's not a little hint, by the way. But at the same
time, go check out his website.
It's not on my website. It's a fucking separate big cartel thing. This is what I mean. I'm ridiculous at this shit. You know, it's like you go, you make your print, or you bulk buy prints in the first place, and then you hope to sell them, and then like you sell a couple, but you don't make your money back, or you do it print on demand. Like it's a bollock, you know. And I try and buy other people's work, like, you know, original copies of people's, like, I see a photograph that I really like, and I'll be like, oh dude, would you make that into print, sell it to me, you know?
Yeah.
But the ease and the speed at which we create work digitally and have work accessible digitally, because it doesn't cost, you know, it doesn't cost in the same way that making a print does, and you're not looking to lose money. It would be great if there was a way at which this could be done. But like you said, you know, the interest just isn't there, and it would become saturated as well, and then essentially worthless.
And that's the problem, is like, it's worth the money it's worth now because it's exclusive because of the people that are involved. And to say otherwise is very silly. Why would anyone pay for that much? Why would anyone pay that much money for a picture of a digital drawing of a lion or a monkey? Like, why would anyone pay that much? There's something going on. It feels nefarious. It feels like a joke I'm not in on. And I won't be able to because I don't have the funds to do it. So it's,
that's the joke that we're not in on and never will be in on because we don't have money.
And that's the problem with people that have money or wealth in the world today, not just the United States, but the world. The reason why Jeff Bezos won't end homelessness in the United States, though he can and still be a billionaire, the reason why Elon Musk won't, you know, do the same. The reason why the people who are rich continue to become richer and we keep getting poorer is because the rich and the wealthy want a poor lower class. They want someone to be rich over. They want someone to have more than, because that's what makes being rich so fun. Like, you get to look down on the poor people and say, oh, I have more than you and you'll never get to my level. And I like that. They're comfortable in that space and they're comfortable excluding people. And the lie is that they're not. And the lie is that they want to make things accessible, but they don't. Because if they did, they just would, but they won't. Like, you can say, like, Jeff Bezos can say he cares about the environment, but that guy doesn't give a fuck. Like, he can say he cares about the homeless problem, but most of the people, and like a lot of people, a big percentage of people who work in Amazon factories are on food stamps, or not factories, warehouses. And we don't need to talk about that, you know, the Amazon warehouse thing, because we already know how bad it is. So I don't think NFTs are ever going to be viable for
the layman
artists, not in the way they say it is, and not on the money making level that they are at. It just won't ever be that way for the rest of us, because it can't be, because they've built it so that it won't be. And that's sad, because,
you know, I get people asking me a lot, you know, about being a photographer, and like, you know, they want to be a photographer. I'm like, it's a horrible reality we live in now, where like a skill set that you've developed over like a long period of time can be easily eclipsed by somebody with none of those skills, but access to a camera and a computer.
Yeah. And that's,
part of the skills now
are social and,
oh, huge.
And
it's self-marketing and stuff in a way that I can't do it. It's more that I don't feel like I've got the time half the time, because I have a job as well. I have like an actual job right now.
Yeah. And if you don't have that safety net, or if you don't have already, you are starting off on a grave disadvantage.
Yeah. Yeah. And I apologize to buddy on video as well, who's just witnessing me vaping too.
Yeah. I made a little bit of an effort to be, you know, presentable. I have a hat on because my hair's crazy. I have a nice little angle here. I cleaned up this thing right here that you can't see, but they can see, you know, to make it not all messy. And you're just over here, legs out, vaping, shorts on. You're a heathen.
I'm a sexy heathen. I'm like the James Dean of podcasts.
Jeez, that's a lot to unpack there. But we're not going to.
No, I mean, we've already covered my resemblance to George Michael, both physically and emotionally.
Physically, emotionally, talent-wise, everything. It's full circle.
I should really do a tribute act.
So what do you think? Final thoughts. What are your final thoughts on NFTs? How do you feel after our very limited discussion?
I think that my final thoughts are that as a way of being able to sell digital art, I think the concept of being able to sell digital art is great. I think that that's something that would benefit thousands of photographers and artists. I think that the viability of being able to do it is where it's bullshit. And I think that it's one of these things where it's like, you know, here's a golden ticket, but actually it's fake gold. It's like, you're not actually getting in the space. It's like, we're sort of going to open a door and show you what you could have, but we're not gonna let you in because, you know, you don't have the money to get in. It's like, this is what you could have if you were rich. And it's not fair. It's at the end of the day, I would love if there was a way to be able to, that it was accessible to everybody, but you know, that's the problem, isn't it? It decreases the value of it. And
exactly. The rarity of it makes it more valuable. And that's the shitty part.
Yeah. As a concept, I really like it, but the execution of it is what makes it exclusive and therefore unattainable.
Interesting. Well, my final thoughts, to actually piggyback off what you said, I don't even think that the viability of it is worth anything, because we don't even treat artists or photographers like it's real work in the first place. So I think we start treating photographers and artists like the work that they do is actual work and it's worth something, then we can talk about the viability of like putting that work on a marketplace that is fair and equitable to artists. But the problem is we don't even have that.
I still tell
people I work as a photographer and they're like, oh, well, what do you do? Like, they still don't understand like what that looks like, you know?
I had someone the other day say to me, who I barely know, was like, oh, you like taking pictures, don't you?
Right.
and I was like, I work as a photographer. And they were like, I need some headshots done for like a work thing. And they were like, do you want it? Could you do that? And I was like, yeah, cool. No problem at all. And they said, and they know I work in coffee, and they were like, I can't, they're like, I can't, you know, but I'll make you some coffee around at the house. And I was like, that's what? Like, and they were,
artists are still on the barter system.
It's like they joked about it, but they did it in a way where like, it was serious. To the extent where they felt like I couldn't go, they put you, you know what I mean? When you get put in that position where you're like, you don't want to go, I need to live.
I need to eat.
I need to eat and stuff and pay bills and things. So like, can you maybe just give me money instead?
And that's that would be quite handy. We're still on the barter system while crypto bros are using a platform to buy Lamborghinis and shit.
It's mental.
Oh, you know what? Like, no, I want to talk about the really quick. I wanted to talk about that fucking, there's a thing called the Constitution DAO, which is this group of people, crypto people, who got together to raise $20 million to buy a copy, one of the copies of the Constitution, own a token, the NFT of it. And then they can decide where it goes and in what museum or whatever, or they can decide what to do with it. But those people got together, raised $20 million. And instead of using it for, humanitarian purposes, they're trying to use it to buy a copy of the fucking Constitution. Who gives a shit? Why is that a thing that we're doing? Why is that cool?
I love the American Constitution just because it's what so many people hang their hat on, you know, and it's a thing
that is a historical document. It's fine. Leave it in a museum. Why the hell are regular people investing their money to buy a copy of it with a token, or buy the token, right? They don't even get to physically touch it. They can talk about what they want to do with it, but they can't physically handle it.
How many fucking people then own it?
A ton, because it has to get 20 million. So that what you get if you invest is you get a token in the DAO where you can sit on the board of people that decide what to do with the Constitution copy if they were to win the bid, right? Yeah. Which on a board that size, I'm going to go ahead and say is fucking worthless.
Yes.
It's like being at the world's largest PTA meeting and what if no one agrees? Why does everyone get a say? It's so stupid. And then like these people it's mainly people based in San Francisco, which by the way has an enormous homeless problem. I'm not saying that $20 million can solve homelessness in San Francisco, but shit, that's a good start. That'll probably help. But no, let's buy a copy of the fucking Constitution, which we definitely need to spend money on. Why? It already exists. No more money needs to be spent on the Constitution. It's existed for years. It's fucking brainless. I hate the crypto space has potential to be really good, but every day crypto people give me a new reason to fucking hate it. And I don't understand.
This podcast is just becoming more and more about you getting all your sort of vitriolic bile out of your system. It's great.
I want people to survive. And there are people on this planet that just literally are like, hey, we're going to just make as much money as possible. And we're going to spend it in the stupidest ways possible.
Speaking of good people.
Don't bring up Kyle McDougal again.
I'm not bringing up Kyle McDougal. He's a fucking asshole. he's an asshole that won't come to America. I think it's probably he just doesn't want to sit on a plane with me for 8 hours. Which is likely. No, it's our guest that we're speaking to in 2 days' time.
I'm excited.
A guy that I only watch a handful of photography channels on YouTube. I'm speaking to one of the guy's channels I watch right now. It's you, Christopher Stern. The asshole that won't get on a plane. I watch his channel. He's like B.A. Baracus. Mr. T. And this guy. Who is he? What's his name?
Brian Burks.
He is... I adore his channel. It's so wholesome. I enjoy the watching the process. I enjoy everything. They're good length videos. They're informative. I feel
you
like
can tell he really loves what he's doing.
As Robbie said to me the other day, he seems like a photographer's photographer, and I couldn't have agreed more.
Yeah. So and I'm he also, much, I feel like he's really honest with himself and with his viewers.
100%. Yeah.
We'll talk more about that when we talk to him. But yeah, I'm really excited to have him on. I'm really glad that he, despite the fact that you.
Oh yeah,
negged him on accident. It was like
him. I sent him a message on a direct message on Instagram from the Spooky Bar Bench podcast, and I wrote, "Hey Brian, we're big fans of your channel and your work. We'd love to have you on the podcast if you'd be interested." To which he responded like really kindly and was like, "Oh yeah, no, that sounds great." And it wasn't until then I was typing my response that I realized that my initial message actually said, "Hey, Brian, we're not fans of your work."
And he didn't even point it out. He was so graceful. Like, I'd love to be on the podcast. Like, he just didn't even care.
I read it and just, I laughed for about 10 minutes. It was so funny. "Hey, man, we're not fans of your work. Want to come on a podcast?"
Because I kind of imagine him going like... Yeah, I'd love to be on. Like, just like defeated, but like still wants to be on the podcast. Oh, I feel so bad. But that was really funny. And he was really cool about it.
Yeah, man, that was super funny. Anyway, we're interviewing him on Thursday. So that podcast will come out like fortnight after this.
Are we going to have this come out before we interview him? Or is this coming out after we already have talked to him?
This is coming out like this
next Monday?
No, I don't know. Tomorrow? Thursday, probably. I'm just moving to Thursdays.
Okay. Yeah,
Thursdays are becoming the new thing for me.
So when you're listening to this podcast, we will probably be talking to Brian as you listen. And then that'll come out the next Thursday, I guess, right?
How exciting.
And the video from this podcast you're listening to now, hopefully the one from Brian and all podcasts going forward, the video from those podcasts will be available on my Patreon page. Mike, I got to get you in there somehow, like as like a person, like as an admin or something. I don't know how to do it. I'll figure it out.
You figure it out, or I can just
unless
send you
don't
video.
Care about that part, I'll just send you the important
stuff. Just send you the video. It gets done separately, so I can just send you the video.
Yeah, all right.
Unless you want me to, you do not want me in amongst the admin of your Patreon page.
You're gonna ruin it.
There might be the odd testicle picture popping up there.
God, I can't trust you with anything. Anyway, that's it for us.
Yeah, that's it for us. Next week we'll talk. So the podcast after this, there'll be more photography talk. It won't be like a techie podcast either. It might be a bit techie. I don't know. Do you know what?
I'm excited. We're going to ask him about NFTs. We're going to ask him about his channel. We're going to ask him about photography. It'll be a well-rounded, full-featured pod.
We'll ask him about the gradual, steady rise of the Third Reich. We'll just see, you know.
As it is today or?
During the, you know, Hitler's time.
We're getting into historical stuff. He's not German, I don't think, from Germany.
I don't think he is. No, I just wanted to. No, you're. No, wait.
You're just curious about what happened in World War II in general.
I'm very curious. I'm not entirely sure what happened. Bad people did bad things. Good people did good things. I've seen Band of Brothers, so I know what the Americans did.
Yeah. That was a historically accurate depiction.
I watched, my granddad, when Band of Brothers came out, I watched it and I was like, this is like, it was a really good like show. And I said to my granddad, "Oh, you really like this?" And he was like, "What's it about?" And I was like, "Oh, it's about this airborne division in America that were part of the D-Day landings and whatnot." And he was just like, "Don't want to watch it." And I was like, "No." He's like, "Fucking Yanks. All they talk about is how they won the war."
I mean, it was the Allies who won the war, but it's true. America does take credit, doesn't it?
I was like, all right. I mean, my granddad was alive during the war. But he was, you know, he was 10 when the war broke out. And but that was his response. I'm not.
I don't want to take part in historical like rewriting or whitewashing. So let's end there. But thank you guys for listening.
Yeah.
Thank you for being a part of this beautiful community.
Hey, and if you're watching, thanks for signing up to Christopher's Patreon.
Yeah, Mike will get some money from that probably, depending on how good the Patreon goes.
Do you know what? I don't want any. It's all for you, buddy.
Oh wow! Look at that. That's brothers.
I know. Christopher also lent me £30 the other week when I was poor, so like, it's fine. It'll work out.
It's fine. So yeah, come back next Thursday for the episode with Brian, and we will see you in the next one.
Toodle pip.